We're at the intersection of ethanol policy and special interests. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. President Trump has repeatedly told farmers in the Midwest that he supports ethanol. Here he is in Council Bluffs, Iowa last month.
As a candidate for president, I pledge to support our ethanol industry and to fight for the American farmer like no president has ever fought before. And we're winning these fights. And you're great patriots, I will tell you. We're winning these fights.
Earlier this month, the EPA released its annual rule for the level of ethanol that must be blended into our nation's gas supply. And the target disappointed the corn-based ethanol industry. Meanwhile, the president has ordered the EPA and the Agriculture Department to review their policy of allowing small oil refineries exemptions from federal obligations. And now we see competing ad wars over ethanol policy. Do you work in the oil industry? Have you seen the effects of policy moves like small refinery waivers? Or are they just a piece of the puzzle when it comes to how we regulate fuel? And corn growers, what's your take on the challenges in your industry? What do you need to grow? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Wally Tyner is an agricultural economics professor at Purdue University. Wally, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So last week we saw this National Trade Association for the Oil Industry put out an ad campaign asking President Trump to roll back these ethanol mandates. Help us understand what these mandates are, what they do.
Well, the mandate started back in 2007. Congress at that point decided that the market wouldn't produce as much renewable fuel as would be good for the country. And so they created mandates for different kinds, for ethanol, for biodiesel, and other biofuels. And it's always been a contentious issue. The oil industry, of course, wants to keep all of the fuel market. And the ethanol and biodiesel industries want to keep the share that was allocated to them in that bill. So there have been skirmishes over all kinds of issues. The current skirmish is over these small refinery waivers, as you indicated.
So within this policy, there is the small refinery exemption. How does that exemption work? What does that mean?
Well, any refinery, and small is sort of a funny name for it because Exxon, Marathon, any company can apply for this small refinery waiver, and it basically means that they do not have to comply with the renewable fuel standard, which is the name of the mandate. And what that means is that effectively it lowers the overall level of the national mandate for the renewable fuel standard. So by law, it's 15 billion gallons for ethanol, for example. Last year, the sum of all these small refinery waivers reduced that by almost 2 billion gallons. So it does reduce the level of the mandate, and it reduces the cost of compliance for those refineries that get the waivers, but it doesn't necessarily reduce the amount of ethanol sold. And that's an interesting point that hardly ever gets mentioned.
Why is that?
The reason is because ethanol has changed its role in the fuel business. It started off as basically just a fuel extender, but ethanol contains a lot of oxygen, which helps fuels burn cleaner. And it contains a lot of octane. And so the refining business has switched to producing 84 octane, by and large, out of the refinery. They blend that with 10% ethanol, and that gives them 87 at the pump. So they need that ethanol to get the octane to sell the 87 at the pump. So today, the demand for ethanol is not coming from the renewable fuel standard. It's coming from the whole refinery supply chain. So the demand for ethanol hasn't fallen nearly as much. It's fallen slightly, but not nearly as much as the sum of these waivers because the industry still needs it.
And basically, then there are these concerns over these waivers. President Trump has ordered a review, and in a letter to the EPA administrator, a lawyer for small refinery companies has said that they'll sue if the EPA does not act on 38 pending requests for waivers. What about litigation here?
Oh, it's quite possible. Almost every issue that's come up regarding the renewable fuel standards since it came into effect in 2007 has gone to the courts ultimately. So it's quite likely that this also in some form or another will go to the courts.
We're talking about ethanol policy with Wally Tyner. He's an agricultural economics professor at Purdue. What do you think about the role of ethanol in our fuel supply? Do you work in the oil industry? Have you seen the effects of policy moves like small refinery waivers? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call now. Chris is joining us from Marshfield. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my comment is I left the agricultural industry about 20 years ago because of chronic low prices, and we're seeing that with all the dairy farmers leaving. My neighbor just sold off his herd, you know, and you know, it's a sad thing that we have a minimum wage, you know, but there's so many exceptions, and commodities are one of them. We should have reformed and gone to a minimum wage commodity system that adjusts with the CPI rather than, you know, just open market commodity prices. That would do better than subsidies. Subsidies are part of the problem because they prop up failing industries.
Chris, thanks. Wally, can you break that down for us? Minimum wage, commodity, and CPIs. What are we talking about here?
Well, a few years ago, we used to have minimum prices for corn and soybeans and other products. We used to have target prices and loan rates and the like. And so we used to have a system that did that. But by and large now, we've moved to a system of crop insurance where farmers can buy insurance for their crop. And it's been a big deal this year because a lot of farmers are going to get prevented planting insurance for either corn or soybeans. So the main support system for commodity farmers today is crop insurance, which, yes, it's not a minimum wage, but it is the mechanism that we use for those commodities to help farmers weather bad years like we're seeing this year.
Well, with ethanol, with our corn supplying 40% of our corn supply is going to ethanol. Is that, I mean, that's a big chunk going to the ethanol industry. Are we too reliant on that specific way to use the corn we grow?
Well, first of all, that number is a bit misleading because that's a gross number. For every bushel of corn that goes into an ethanol refinery, a third of it becomes ethanol, and a third of it becomes distillers' dried grains, which goes back to feed animals.
Ah.
So the net is really about 26% or something like that. Still a big number, but it's not 40%. So far, there were dire predictions back in 2008 when we had the drought and some of the earlier other years where we've had high corn prices that we couldn't do both food and fuel. But more recently, the growth in yields, the growth in productive capacity, we have the most efficient agricultural system in the world in the United States. And it's pretty clear at the current levels that we can produce both food, feed, and fuel.
And where do we cap that growth on corn? Do we continue to grow the corn industry?
Well, the ethanol industry is capped right now. It's at 15 billion gallons. That's the level of the renewable fuel standard. It's not set to grow. That could change if Congress changes its mind, but that's where it is now. So the fuel part of it's not growing. The food and feed part is not growing too much either. The biggest flux or flex in the system is how much corn do we export? So we have enough corn for all of our own needs, food, feed, and fuel, plus we export corn to the rest of the world.
And how much do we export to the rest of the world? How big of a commodity is it for export?
You're testing my memory. I think it's a
ballpark. You know, it's early.
I think it's about a fifth of the corn.
Do you see farmers concerned about this push and pull in Congress over ethanol policy? At the end of the day, is this really going to hurt our corn growers here in Wisconsin?
Every year, somebody in Congress introduces a bill to get rid of the renewable fuel standard. And so, yes, it's sort of a constant struggle. You've got the oil industry, and the oil industry is particularly concerned about E15, which was that's what was in your opening statement from Trump. They're concerned about that because that does take market share. They don't need more than 10% to satisfy their needs for oxygen and octane. So that extra 5% takes market from the oil industry. So that will be the grounds for the next big fight. How far do we go with E15? My sense is that it will grow slowly, perhaps very slowly, because the system isn't set up for it yet. But I don't think the oil industry stations are going to be jumping on the bandwagon for E15. And so the growth in it is not going to be that large, and the oil industry will continue to be opposed to E15.
We're learning about ethanol policy and what happens to a new draft rule for ethanol targets for next year. Federal mandates require refineries to include increasing amounts of biofuels in the gasoline they produce. Wally Tyner researches the ethanol industry as an ag economics professor at Purdue University. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. When you think about the future of the oil industry and the biofuels industry, what changes do you want to see? Join in. You can call, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at ethanol policy here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Earlier this month, the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, they launched ads urging President Trump to ease ethanol mandates for small oil refineries.
President Trump promised a win-win energy policy for all Americans. But for small refineries, unchecked ethanol mandates are job killers, hurting the backbone of our manufacturing economy.
And the corn growers say waivers are hurting family farms. The National Corn Growers Association launched this ad last month.
Mr. President, you delivered on E15, but we have more work to do. EPA's oil refinery waivers threaten to undo your good works.
President Trump is supporting farm families. His EPA should too.
Where do you come down on this? You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Wally Tyner stays with us. He's an agricultural economics professor at Purdue. So, Wally, let's talk about these ads and the pushback against these waivers. Where are these ads coming from, and what are they trying to accomplish?
Great question, Kate. The ads, of course, are coming from the industry associations on the corn and ethanol industry on the one side and the oil industry on the other side. The ethanol industry is concerned that effectively what these waivers do is reduce the level of the renewable fuel standard. And long run, they don't want that to happen. They want to keep the standard at 15 billion gallons. That's what Congress legislated. The oil industry is mainly what are called merchant refiners. Merchant refiners are refiners that don't have any gas stations. They don't sell any product at retail. They just buy crude oil, refine it, and then sell the gasoline and diesel and jet fuel to other people. But still, they're obliged to comply with the renewable fuel standard. So they view that compliance cost as a real cost to them and think they shouldn't have to pay it. And it's some of them are small, some of them are large. So it's really about the way the renewable fuel standard is enforced. It's enforced on domestic refiners and importers of oil products. And so they want to get rid of that cost, basically.
Stephanie in Hazelhurst called in to ask, when we consider the economic impact of ethanol on various industries, do we also take into account the amount of oil that's being used to produce it, like, you know, by farm equipment or transporting the commodity? What goes into that calculation?
Great question. And it's been early on, there were legitimate questions about how much emissions are reduced on net for corn ethanol. But the recent work has shown that corn ethanol does reduce emissions, and that's after you take out all of the fertilizer, all of the diesel, all of the transport, all of the energy that goes into producing it is netted out, and it still reduces greenhouse gas emissions around 25% to 30%. So yes, it all is counted, and corn ethanol does reduce emissions. Biodiesel reduces them even more, but all of that is counted.
Well, farmers do have a vested interest in what is going on in Capitol Hill in these ethanol mandates. How much have ethanol mandates helped farmers?
Another good question. Before the mandate ever happened, we were producing in the early 80s and even into the 90s about 4 billion gallons of ethanol through a subsidy. But then in 2007, the mandate passed, and most people think, well, the mandate's what drove production from 4 billion gallons up to 12 or 13 billion gallons. But in fact, what happened is that oil prices shot up during that period. Gasoline prices between 2004 and 2008 multiplied 4.5 times. We had in 2006 a ban on something called MTBE that was used as an additive for gasoline because it was toxic and it was getting into the water supply. So all these things came together, and most of the growth in ethanol during that period was market driven. Mm. The market was always ahead of the renewable fuel standard. And that's something that most people don't recognize, is that, you know, had that not happened, yeah, the renewable fuel standard would have been really important during that period. But those things did happen. And so it was a market pull rather than a mandate pull during that period. Later on, the growth has been more mandate.
Well, the petrochemical industry is a very profitable, large industry with a lot of ability to push its special interests. Are these mandates even making any type of impact on the bottom line of these companies, of these oil refineries?
Well, in fact, today they're helping because they need the octane in ethanol. And ethanol is the cheapest source of the octane to blend with gasoline to get it up to the point that you can buy it at the pump and it'll work in your car correctly. So right now, the system has been geared since about 2009, 2010, to using ethanol as a fuel additive to provide that extra octane, to provide that extra oxygen. Since that's the cheapest source of getting that octane, the refiners are actually benefiting from it.
What is the cycle of ethanol targets and rules? Is this a cyclical thing yearly, or does it change? How often, you know, does Congress perhaps change its approach, and even the president change its approach on these ethanol targets?
The target for corn ethanol is 15 billion gallons, and it's been that for several years now, and okay, it's not set to change at all. So it's constant. The target that changes is something called cellulosic biofuels, and that's always been the dream and the hope, is that we can produce biofuels from corn stover, we can produce it from crops that we grow, switchgrass and miscanthus, even municipal solid waste. but we haven't been able to do that economically. And so each year, even though the mandate grows, each year EPA has to waive that mandate because we can't produce it anywhere close to economic.
Do you mean by broadening out the value added industry here, making more crops being able to be changed and used in this capacity?
Well, that, but mainly it's using, you know, you can take off about half the corn stover, the corn residue, without affecting soil fertility. You can use municipal solid waste. You can use wheat straw. There are a lot of things that we're not using today that we could use if we had a cost-effective way to convert it to biofuel. What's missing and what never happened was development of that cost-effective way to convert it.
Well, beyond the waivers, what are the next steps that you're watching for in this ethanol industry tug of war? What is the biofuels industry working toward, and what about ethanol here?
I think one of the important developments that's emerging is aviation biofuels. You don't think about that very much, but you know, on the ground, if you want to reduce emissions, you can use electric vehicles. You can use compressed natural gas vehicles. In the air, if you want to reduce emissions, there's only one choice, and that's biofuels, because you can't use batteries, they're too heavy. You can't use compressed natural gas, it's not have enough energy density. So there's a lot of interest now in getting biofuels that can be used in aviation. And I see that as perhaps the next biggest push in the biofuels arena.
Wally, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Wally Tyner is an agricultural economics professor at Purdue University. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.